Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute and a half past the hour, and we begin Titanic Tuesday on the horn. This is the Head On Radio Network. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we call home out there in the series of tubes. That's where you go if you want to jump into the conversation this evening in the real-time multimedia madcap zany real-time... Yeah, I mentioned that. Extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Jump on in, and you will be greeted by Hoghead, Jug of Punch, Labor Man, and, of course, longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has found conditions favorable for folding space this evening and becoming man cave. Good evening, one and all. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and yes, it's Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. The Horn being a listener-supported broadcast operation. A listener-supported broadcast operation that operates on next to nothing as compared with other media outlets. We try to raise $200 every evening, whether we need it or not. Hint, we always need it. And we find ourselves this evening in a $400 hole. But thanks very kindly to Chris in Germany, there's a $100 challenge on the table, which, if met, will knock out half, will fill in half of the hole. And so, consequently, it would be great if people would jump in there and turn their fives into tens, their tens to 20s, their 20s to 40s. No, there aren't any $40 bills, but you get the idea. And a 50 becomes 100, 100, well, heck, with the challenge on the table, 100 bucks becomes two, and maybe we'll roll that challenge into another, and the next thing you know, we'll be out of the hole. Hey. Could we get started? No, well, don't dream, Bob. Don't dream. Please. This is, I mean, I'm not kidding when I say we operate on a shoestring here. And so when we lay a goose egg like we did last night, it's particularly, I mean, it's stressful. I won't kid you. There's bills need paid. And makes them really hard to pay them when we lay goose eggs. So if you're so inclined, run over to headonradionetwork.com, click on Contribute, and fill in the fields there. Leave the one out about what you do and where you do it. We don't care. If you'd like to, you can become a monthly subscriber and just click that, make this a recurring monthly donation button, and ba-doom, get to the next screen. But please, sincerely, please, let's get out of this $400 hole. I've got a note coming from Sparky saying he's good to go for Thursday on the front porch, that being Thanksgiving Thursday. Remember, we will be some of the only live progressive radio going on Thursday, to the best of my knowledge. And you're welcome to stop on by and be part of the conversation. And since we're going to do a front porch, that means we'll have a rousing little round table going on. And I hope you'll join in. I really do. You know, the time and everything remains the same, but I really appreciate Sparky being willing to share his Thanksgiving with us by moderating the Horn Malloy Skype chat group on Thursday afternoon. Snork pointing out in the chat room. Hi, Snork. Listener supported means it's important for us to give. Yes. Yes, it really does. Snork bringing those clear-thinking, high-powered analytical skills to bear, which we all value so very much and enjoy when he shares with us. So it really is. It's Titanic Tuesday. Titanic Tuesday, you may recall, is named for something our buddy Jim, about a half a hundred miles from here, heard on local right-wing radio some years back when America's most stentorian monotone, Steve, not a member of the fraternity of Steve here at the Horn, when Steve took a break from reading the newspaper to his audience in his monotone and causing people to run off the road and hit phone poles and so forth because they'd been lulled into a complete hypnotic state. It happened when he did. He took a call from one of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking followers. Mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing followers. It's really not much difference in that crowd. Mouth-walker said, "Steve, how come it is that there is seashells in the rocks in West Virginia? We ain't nowhere near the ocean." To which he replied, "Well, caller, that's because of the movement of the Titanic plates."
Yeah.
No word yet on the movement of the Titanic popover pan. Big, crowded Titanic table, what we got here after all these years. One of these days, somebody's going to go through and do a research paper on, just how many things are on the Titanic table. Yeah, okay. So we dedicate Tuesdays to manifestations of Titanic intellect. The kind of intellect that says, what? An iceberg? Full steam ahead! Flank speed! Yeah. And so, consequently, that's where we find ourselves. That's where Titanic Tuesday comes from. And we got lots of material to work with on Titanic Tuesday this evening. We do. Sparky says, what Thanksgiving? I'd be watching football. No bird here. No bird? God, it makes me feel like I ought to make a pan of dressing and just, freeze-dry it or something and ship it off to the far reaches of space-folding Northern California. And, I don't know. Maybe the NFL games will be good this year. It's kind of hard to say. We'll have to wait and see, I guess. That's usually how it works out. So there's a $100 challenge on the table. $20 of which just went away. $20 just turned into $40. Thank you, Snork. Thank you very, very kindly. So that means we've got $80 to go on the challenge and $360 to go in fundraising for the evening. Thank you. Thanks for getting us started. Okay, so it is, it really, really is, no kidding, Titanic Tuesday on the Horn. And that means that, we've got a lot of material to choose from. But I've kind of got an idea where I would like for the conversation to go. But also, it's November 22nd, so as Willie Loman's wife once noted, attention must be paid. This is that day. This is that day that is probably the single most shocking horror to the baby boom generation that they ever knew. I would dare say that the assassination of John Kennedy probably even outstrips 9/11 in terms of the reverberations and the, well, I don't know. Maybe we just compare the two side by side. In both instances, a majority of people are convinced that they don't know what actually happened. And in many ways, a lot of dreams died on this day in 1963. Me, I like to commemorate, if commemorate is the right word, and it probably isn't. Every year, I take a moment to commemorate the JFK assassination, or at least observe the date, with a few words from one of my favorite prophets, the prophet Bill Hicks. Peace be upon him. Because there's something about, this particular take of his is absolutely brilliant. And for some reason, the computer is once again being strange. Go figure. All right, let's try the other one. You sit there, you do your thing, you get audio queued up, and then bupkis. But we'll get there in a second. Someday I'll have a staff. Yeah, on this day, the first thing that pops up when you type in Bill Hicks is, yep, ta-da. Here we go. Maybe.
Kennedy. I love talking about the Kennedy assassination because to me it's a great example of a totalitarian government's ability to, you know, manage information and thus keep us in the dark any way they deem. Oh, sorry, wrong meeting. Shit. That's the meeting we're having tomorrow at the docks. I love talking about Kennedy. I was just down in Dallas, Texas. You know, you can go down there and to Dealey Plaza where Kennedy was assassinated. And you can actually go to the sixth floor of the School Book Depository. It's a museum called the Assassination Museum. I think named that after the assassination. I can't be too sure of the chronology here, but anyway, they have the window set up to look exactly like it did on that day, and it's really accurate, you know, because Oswald's not in it. Yeah, so. Painstaking accuracy, you know. It's true. It's called the sniper's nest. It's glassed in. It's got the boxes sitting there. You can't actually get to the window itself. And the reason they did that, of course, they didn't want thousands of American tourists getting there each year going, no fucking way! I can't even see the road! Shit, they're lying to us! There's no fucking way! Not unless Oswald was hanging by his toes upside down from the ledge. Either that or some pigeons grabbed onto him, flew him over the motorcade. Surely someone would have seen that. You know, there was rumors of anti-Castro pigeons seen drinking in bars. Someone overheard them saying, coo, coo. Coo. unbelievable. And you know what's wild is people's attitudes in the States about it. Talking about Kennedy, people come up to me, Bill, quit talking about Kennedy, man. Let it go. It's a long time ago. Just forget about it. I'm like, all right, then don't bring up Jesus for me. As long as we're talking shelf life here. Bill, you know, Jesus died for you. Yeah, it was a long time ago. Forget about it. How about this? Get Pilate to release the fucking files. Quit washing your hands, Pilate, and release the goddamn files. Who else was on that grassy Golgotha that day?
Bill, it was just, you know, taking over of democracy by totalitarian government. Let it go. Okay. Sorry.
Back and to the left. Back and to the left. Back and to the left. Back into the left. Which, by the way, that action you see Kennedy's head do in the Zapruder film? Caused by a bullet. Coming from up there. Yeah. I know it looks to the layman or someone who might dabble in physics. This action here would have been caused by a bullet coming from, well, up here. Did you see that? Did everyone see that? Yeah, but no. What happened was Oswald's gun went off, causing an echo to echo through the buildings of Dealey Plaza. And the echo went by the limo on the left, up into the grassy knoll, hitting some leaves, causing dust to fly out, which 56 witnesses testified was a gunshot, because immediately Kennedy's head went over. But the reason his head went over is because the echo went by the motorcade on the left, and he went, what was that? So there. We have figured it out. Go back to bed, America. Your government has figured out how it all transpired. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control again. Here's American Gladiators. Watch this. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Here is American Gladiators. Here is 56 channels of it. Watch these pituary retards bang their fucking skulls together and congratulate you on living in the land of freedom. Here you go, America. You are free to do as we tell you. You are free to do as we tell you.
Oh, good. Honey, I heard on the news that they figured out that the gun, what happened is that there is an echo and that Kennedy was asking Jackie what it was, and that's why his head flew up. Honey, what time's Gladiators on? Are we missing it?
Kind of encapsulates the whole thing, doesn't it? Yeah. But November 22nd isn't just the day they, you know, assassinated John Kennedy. As our good friend Eugene Finnerman over at FinnermanWorks.com reminds us, it's also St. Cecilia's Day. Eugene is the most brilliant satirist, historical satirist on the web. And he notes, on this day in either AD 170 or 223, St. Cecilia died. Even the church can't keep track of all its virgin martyrs. However, St. Cecilia's death should have been memorable. She died 3 days after her decapitation. What is it about November 22nd and decapitation? The patron saint of music evidently had mastered breath control. A Wagnerian soprano might last 2 weeks after a decapitation. Oh, that's cold. And Cecilia really gave a farewell performance, spending much of her last 3 days in song. You or I might use our miraculous powers to regenerate a neck, but that's why we're not saints. If Cecilia was a virgin martyr, at the very least her husband was a saint, too. His name was Valerian. On their wedding night, Cecilia told him that she had a wonderful surprise for him if he converted to Christianity. The young patrician promptly did, and an angel then appeared to explain the bliss of chastity. Valerian apparently never convinced Cecilia of the need for charity. The church records Valerian as a saint and martyr, but not as a virgin. There may be limits to what you can ask of an Italian man. Cecilia turned their home into a church, and that certainly violated Roman zoning ordinances. Of course, the law blamed Valerian. The husband is supposed to be responsible. When Valerian refused to make a sacrifice to the gods, he became the sacrifice. The matter might have ended there. Roman authorities were not really interested in prosecuting aristocratic women for their religious eccentricities. In fact, the government regarded Christianity as a female's religion. Good works and virtue were perfectly compatible with a woman's domestic role in Roman society. The danger of Christianity was if the men became less bloodthirsty, or if the slaves demanded, you know, justice. But Cecilia wouldn't let herself be ignored. She continued to preach and sing. In planning her execution, the authorities first showed her the consideration due an aristocratic lady. Being sealed in a steam bath was said to be painless and therapeutic. You suffocated while enjoying all the benefits of a facial. This particular form of execution was even considered Christian. The Emperor Constantine applied it to an unfaithful wife. It only fell out of use when bathing did in the 6th century. However, as seems to be the rule with all of these martyrdoms, the first attempt always fails. Cecilia survived the steam treatment, and Romans then tried decapitation, and that eventually worked. You now may see St. Cecilia's head in Rome, Italy. Unfortunately, it no longer takes musical requests. Yeah. So thanks to Eugene Finnerman, that just sort of puts a little context into it all. And who knew, because I'm being reminded by Ron and Raleigh. Don't forget, Bob, November 22nd, 1963 was also the day Doctor Who premiered on the BBC. Weird juxtaposition. Who knew? Ah, see what I did there? Ah, I don't just say things. Ah! Yeah, I know. And hey, thanks, Glenn, for jumping in. Your 10 just turned into 20, so that's 30, that's 60. So we've got $30 met of the of Chris's $100 challenge. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very much indeed. So 60 bucks to go on Chris's challenge, and so that means $260 to go to get out of the hole. Very true, Sparky. Very true indeed. Sparky pointing out in the chat room, it was also our weekend with Walter. Walter Cronkite. Can you imagine? I mean, let's don't try. But can you imagine any of our current crop of talking heads handling something? I mean, even the people who handled 9/11, which was done by that last crop of professional journalists in television news, Peter Jennings and the like. Those guys aren't. I mean, really? I mean, can you imagine George Snuffleupagus? Handling the sound effects tonight will be Brother Deacon Gerald Rimshot. Thanks, folks. He'll be here all week, and be sure to tip your servers. They're out there working hard for you. Mm-hmm. Yep. I sense a disturbance in the force this evening. But it's Titanic Tuesday. And to the extent that I just said, you know, can you imagine any of the current crop of for-profit media celebrities handling something like a presidential assassination. Those self-same for-profit media celebrities are somehow or another in the news, because Yesterday, there was a little meeting over at that gaudy pile of nasty ass attempts at Baroque design that's known as Trump World Headquarters or whatever. World Fascist Headquarters. The bunker. I don't know. I don't know the word. But there was a parade of for-profit media celebrities and executives who went into the building because they had been summoned there by Herr Trump. Ah, Herr Trump? Ah, ah, I'm working, people, I'm working. Herr Trump? Going to hell. But anyway, they were summoned there by Herr Trump, the hairball. And when they got there, it was supposed to be, get this, and I kind of got to work through this. Will in Chicago asking, Bob, would not weasel be more accurate than hair? Well, weasels have hair, Will. I mean, let's not be, you know, discriminatory or anything. The color is more resemblant of an orangutan, isn't it? Well, fur, hair, I mean, you know, one man's fur is another man's hair. Pajama, pajama, Will. Tomato, tomato, potato, patata, Nazi, Nazi. The last one probably being the most relevant. But it's just kind of a work through it thing. So the likes of Wolf Blitzer, once referred to by Mike Malloy as U-Boat Commander Wolf Blitzer, and back when he would show up with those high-necked, ribbed turtlenecks. Jeff Zucker and Lester Holt and George Snuffleupagus. I mean, all kinds of luminaries from the hard-charging, Johnny-on-the-spot, for-profit TV media showed up because they had been told that they were summoned to have an off-the-record discussion with Herr Trump about access to the Trump White House in the coming maladministration. Instead, this off-the-record conversation turned out to be a haranguing. Trump got going and said, "We're in a room full of liars, the deceitful, dishonest media who got it all wrong." And then, you know, he waved his dick finger, his little tiny dick fingers, a little bit, and called out Jeff Zucker. I don't know, maybe he's mad at Jeff Zucker because Jeff Zucker finally had the light go on for him and said, because Jeff Zucker said, maybe we gave a little too much free publicity to Trump by about $1 billion or so. He mocked Martha Raddatz, belittled an NBC female correspondent who got it wrong. Oh yeah, it was a real party. Here's the fun part. Now, I mean, Joke Toad was there from NBC. James Goldston was there from the Disney ABC. Aaron Burnett was there. Charlie Rose, Christopher Isham, Nora O'Donnell. Lots and lots and lots of people there. all of them millionaire celebrity TV news heads. And not to put too fine a point on it, but why? No, really, why? Why were they there? In what universe is it the job of the Fourth Estate to come crawling when they are beckoned to a secret meeting by Donald Trump or by any executive? I mean, do you remember? You remember when Barack Obama took office? He had a lovely sit down luncheon with at George Will's house with fine bone china and Pui Fuse or Verve Clico or some sort of highfalutin wine and you know, dishes that we can't pronounce, and he sat down and broke bread with all the goddamn wingnuts of the for-profit media and kissed their respective rings, and then they went back to the job of sliming him. And then a little bit later, he came back to the White House and invited Rachel Maddow and a few other folks over for some beans and Kool-Aid in styrofoam cups. Yeah. Well, this wasn't that. This was an off-the-record meeting. And so the question begs itself, what responsible journalism operation takes secret meetings with someone about to become the most powerful man on earth? Because it almost makes you think that maybe they're complicit. Maybe they're collaborators. And you wouldn't be far wrong. Because it was about access. And of course, in the rarefied atmosphere of the for-profit media, access is everything. I mean, scoring that big interview with the president. I mean, look, Jesus God, the list of people who went crawling on their soft little bellies into Trump Tower to do obeisance in front of Trump in promise of access, and instead get harangued as liars. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, the New York Times got its own separate meeting. Oh, and by the way, though, so it didn't turn out to be a secret meeting. Somebody leaked to the New York Post. And then it got picked up and republished in other places. So just exactly what the went on there? Would you, anybody want to help? I mean, is there any credibility left? To the for-profit media? I mean, they cried and whimpered when he name-called them, but not one of them. Of all of that list, because, you know, if this had happened, somebody would have reported it. Not one of those for-profit media celebrities had the nerve, the guts, the ethics, the morals, the courage to simply stand up, turn around, and walk out. Now, these are all wealthy people. They're not ink-stained wretches who have to sweat between paychecks. Joke toad? Really? You know, it was kind of funny. You know who wasn't there? Joe and Mika. Scar and the Meat Puppet, as Charlie Pierce refers to them. They weren't there because it's pretty much become an open secret that at the same time he's been sitting on the set of Morning Joe month after month, week after week, day after day, morning after morning, Joe Scarborough has been serving as an advisor to the Trump people. Yeah. But no, Jack Abernethy didn't walk out. Jeff Zucker didn't walk out. Deborah Ternes didn't walk out. Lester Holt, Choke Toad, George Snuffleupagus, Butch Blitzer, none of them could find enough goddamned mammalian courage to stand up and walk out on a punk, a thug, a neo-Nazi asshole post. Meanwhile, Brother Deacon Gerald says, I'm sure it went something like this. Now look here, you guys. We're not going to have any of that negative publicity anymore, see? You guys are going to fall in line, see? And if you don't, it's going to be curtains for you. Curtains!
Oh, yes, Mr. Trump.
It went a little bit differently in the New York Times meeting after Trump took to his goddamn Twitter. Jesus, this is going to be four embarrassing years. We're going to find out if a country can be governed 140 characters at a time. Trump demanded the same off-the-record meeting with the New York Times. And while I'm not prone to giving a hell of a lot of credit to the New York Times, the New York Times said, oh, no, Donnie, no, no. No, it's on the record or nothing. And so since he was on the record, he toned it down. This is, of course, how fascist autocrats behave. One of the ways that the Munich was normalized was by people writing, you know, about in, it was by inviting people into his residence where they could then write about the architectural design. Yeah. Unfortunately, if you compare the photographs, you'll find that Donald Trump and Saddam Hussein had roughly the same taste in decor. Yeesh. So he's a little bit more of a mellowed out dude. Well, you know, you got a point, Carol. Carol Baker. Oh, come on, Bob. He had to call that meeting. He couldn't source enough horses' heads to put in the beds of each one of those journalists. Yeah, it's true. He called the glue factory, and they were fresh out. Point well taken. So instead of a whole bunch of horses' heads, it was just all those journalists and one horse's ass. I did that one all by myself. Kind of proud of it. But he was a little mellowed out by the time he got to the New York Times. And the New York Times, by God, made him come to them. After he repeatedly referred to them with the hashtag failing in a series of bitchy tweets. And Let's see, what's the Times say here? The story, credit where credit's due, by Michael D. Shear, Julie Hirschfeld Davis, and Maggie Haberman. President-elect Donald J. Trump on Tuesday tempered some of his most extreme campaign promises, dropping his vow to jail Hillary Clinton, expressing doubt about the value of torturing terrorism suspects, and pledging to have an open mind about climate change.
Ha!
But in a wide-ranging... Wait a minute. Dropping his vow to jail Hillary Clinton? I know. Everybody who just heard that's going, yeah, but what about all those assholes at his fucking rallies chanting, lock her up! Lock her up! Lock her up! What about them? Well, they're just going to have to suck it. Because it was a lie. We know this. No president has the power to simply lock her up. Somewhere along the way, someone's actually explained to him, maybe it was James Comey, somebody's explained to him that she didn't actually violate any laws. He probably knows. You know who probably explained that to him? His Russian masters. Yeah, one of his minions, or maybe Big Bad Vladdy Daddy himself explained that to him.
It's something we were doing to get you elected. It's not something she did. She did not do anything.
Right? I love the line about having an open mind about climate change. Because it assumes facts, not in evidence. You have to have a mind before it can be deemed open. But in a wide-ranging, hour-long interview with reporters and editors at the New York Times, which was scheduled, canceled, and then reinstated after a dispute over the ground rules, Mr. Trump was fiercely unapologetic about repeatedly flouting the traditional ethical and political conventions that have long shaped the American presidency. He said he had no obligation to establish boundaries between his business empire and his White House, conceding that the Trump brand is certainly a hotter brand than it was before. He defended Stephen K. Bannon, racist Bannon, his chief strategist, against charges of racism, calling him a decent guy. And he savaged Republicans who had failed to support him in his unorthodox White House bid. That's all you got. His unorthodox White House bid. Jesus Christ. They're going to lay down, aren't they? The interview demonstrated Mr. Trump's apparent eagerness to please his audience and his tendency to speak in generalities, even as he was pressed to elaborate on policy positions that propelled him to a convincing and surprising victory over Mrs. Clinton 2 weeks ago. Normalizing sons of bitches! Convincing and surprising victory? Dipshit still 1.7 million votes down. I guess that would be a surprising victory. Me, I'm not convinced. Not even a little bit. He said he has no interest in pressing for Mrs. Clinton's prosecution over her use of a private email server for financial acts committed by the Clinton Foundation. I want to move forward. I don't want to move back. I don't want to hurt the Clintons. I really don't. Jesus Christ. There was never a plan to lock her up. Try explaining that to the Trumpansies. Gullible left. And, you know, it's frustrating for me to say the aggrieved, gullible left because, you know what? I'm probably more left than the gullible left is left. But I also recognize that things happen in their own due time. The president-elect's turnabout on the need for torture as a tool in the fight against terrorism, which he repeatedly endorsed during the campaign, was remarkable. Really? Remarkable? You got all those knowers of words there at the New York Times, and what you come up with is remarkable? How about predictable? How about mendacious? How about two-faced? How about dishonest? Nah. I mean, the gray lady wouldn't want to be, you know, using really, really, you know, strong language or anything. I mean, and that might upset the little old lady in Dubuque. I love this line. He said, "I've never found it to be useful," Mr. Trump said of General James N. Mattis's remarks on torture. "Give me a pack of cigarettes and a couple of beers and I'll do better." Trump said, "I was very impressed by that answer. I have a hard time doing Trump because when I try to form my mouth into that anus shape, it gets really difficult, but it really does start sounding Trumpy, doesn't it?" He knows he's on thin ice already. Saying he's going to look at the Paris Climate Agreement very closely. And he said clean air and crystal clear water are vitally important. Well, head on out to Standing Rock there, Donnie, you damn dick. Because that's what they're working on out there. That's what they're defending out there, some crystal clear water. Uh-huh. And then, of course, in the most important question, asked about his antagonism with the news media and his vow to rethink libel laws, he told the group, which included the Times publisher Arthur O. Sulzberger Jr. and other executives, "I think you'll be happy." But probably the real takeaway was when they started asking him about conflicts of interest with his goddamn phony baloney businesses. "The president can't have a conflict of interest." You know, the more I hear that, the more he begins to sound like that one character from Trailer Park Boys. "Oh, come on, Jack, let's just go knock over at Coinstar." Yeah, true. Brother Deacon Gerald says, "I'm sure David Duke's buddies call him a decent guy as well, so there's that." The president can't have a conflict of interest. You got that? So dig it. This is kind of interesting. He hauls in the TV people and shrieks and screams and throws a hissy on them. "Haben Sie gehalten geworden sein! Sich heil!" Right? But he's deferential to the New York Times because the New York Times pushed back and said, "Sorry, no off-the-record meeting, Donnie." He insists that he can still have business partners into the White House for grin-and-grab photographs. God, I'm so old. I remember when the better part of the entire 1990s was used by a flabby-ass opioid addict to scream that the Clintons were putting the Lincoln bedroom up for sale. Trump rejected the idea that he was bound by federal anti-nepotism laws against installing his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, in a White House job. But he said he would want to avoid the appearance of a conflict and might instead seek to, and I'm sure important people everywhere from Tel Aviv to Amman to Damascus to Cairo, to Beirut to Tehran to Baghdad are all, and maybe even Ankara are going, oh, this is going to be great. He might instead seek to make Jared Kushner a special envoy charged with brokering peace in the Middle East.
The President of the United States is allowed to have whatever conflict he or she wants, but I don't want to do that.
But since his son-in-law Jared Kushner is an allegedly observant Jew,
he could be very helpful
in solving the Israeli-Palestinian problem.
Yeah, I would love to be able to be the one that made peace with Israel and the Palestinians. Jared would be very good at it. He knows the region.
Oh, yeah. And then there was the full-throated defense of racist Bannon. Oh, I think it's only going to get interestinger and interestinger. Yeah, but I mentioned a little something about the struggle for crystal clear water out there on the plains of North Dakota and the Standing Rock Reservation. As I said, I spent a big chunk of Sunday night watching a grainy live feed of a police riot on the Blackwater Bridge on Highway 1806 near the reservation. It was a police riot. I mean, the water protectors had things like coats. They had things like water. Mm-hmm. They were responded to by a militarized law enforcement force that could have easily been, with the equipment they brought, deployed to downtown goddamn Baghdad. They brought their concussion grenades, percussion grenades, something. They brought water cannon. They brought tear gas and smoke bombs. They brought weapons that fired rubber bullets, which, despite the presence of the word rubber in there, does not mean harmless. Hell, under some circumstances, it doesn't even mean non-lethal. And somewhere along the way, one of the people one of the many thousands of people over time who have come to Standing Rock to stand with Standing Rock, a woman from New York by the name of Sophia Wyszynski was transporting water to people who had been attacked with poison gas. Because let's understand, when we talk about tear gas, again, that's normalizing is one of those words that I'm paying attention to these days because it's a function that I'm paying to these days. When we call it tear gas, we're normalizing it, and making it acceptable.
It's poison gas. The use of it constitutes, under virtually any standard, poison gas warfare. And that was what was being engaged in against the Standing Rock people Sunday night into Monday morning. Warfare. And they were, and the cops were throwing these percussion grenades, flash bang grenades, they're sometimes called. And they threw one directly, some cop threw one directly at Sophia Wyszynski. And it exploded on impact. And yesterday morning I saw the photographs and I declined for a couple of reasons. I declined to share those photos to my Facebook page. One, they were extremely graphic. I think we could probably ditch the extremely and just say they were graphic. Two, there was not a sufficient degree of provenance and corroboration on them, and I didn't want to get burned. I didn't want to put something out there that turned out later to not be true. For instance, there's a letter going around the internet that has letterhead on it that says, Trump, make America great again, or something like that. And it is said to have been directed to a woman in a neighborhood who wears a hijab. And it begins, dear terrorist bitch. And of course, I saw it and I was drawn to it like a moth to a flame because it's what I expect of Trumpanzees. However, upon further review, as the guys in the striped shirts say every Sunday, it turns out that thing has been said to have come from Harrisburg, from somewhere in Delaware, from somewhere in Ohio, from somewhere in Michigan. And so there wasn't enough corroboration for me to use it. And that was the same kind of motivation that kept me from sharing the photos of Sophia Wyszynski. But it turns out that the grisly photographs I saw of Sophia Wyszynski were entirely and horrifyingly true. You know, we think of human bone as being something white, but it really kind of has to be bleached out by the sun or done in by, you know, a long period of not being alive, not having life in it, before it gets all whitish. Inside our bodies, it's apparently kind of a yellowy color, you know, because I guess like plasma is yellow and bone marrow produces white blood cells. And right. Because see, Sophia Wyszynski's arm had been blown open all the way to the bone. And you could see both the radius and the ulna, because most of the tissue and ligament and muscle mass was gone. The radial and the ulnar arteries were severed. And she was eventually medevaced to a hospital in Minneapolis, where she's undergone surgery, and they're trying to determine whether or not they'll be able to save her arm, and odds are they won't. And so consequently, meanwhile, in typical form, the Morton County Sheriff's Department in North Dakota swears up and down that she do'd it to herself. that somehow or another a propane canister or something blew up in her arms or in her hand. There's only one problem. As the Standing Rock people noted, they have the little tiny pieces of flashbang grenade that were lodged in her arm and were recovered through a process of surgery. And there's not even a statement from Morton County saying that they'll investigate or try to find if there was, because see, it's verified. Those so-called eyewitnesses, the cops were throwing flashbang grenades at people. You're not supposed to throw flashbang grenades at people. Their effectiveness is not as an anti-personnel weapon. Their effectiveness is in so-called crowd control. Yeah. And a young woman has had her life forever changed as a result of that moment in the wee small hours of Monday morning in North Dakota. But truthfully speaking, or more broadly speaking, she had her life changed the moment that she decided to go to Standing Rock. Or I would dare say she did. Because it's in that moment when you realize that the struggle going on at Standing Rock is a struggle going on for every human being in the United States, that some people will find themselves subject to a moral calling. And she did. Yeah, VT Blom in the chat room. Shock and awe, Bob. Shock and awe. Snork pointing out that many pepper sprays now contain microabrasives that can cause permanent eye damage. Because freedom. Exactly. It'll get worse after January. It's bad enough now with the Obama administration completely. Okay, not completely, but substantively turning its back on Standing Rock. Tens of thousands of people have signed petitions begging the Obama administration to please do something within its power about what's going on there. And meanwhile, the man at the head of Energy Act, what is it? I forget the name of the actual larger holding company. Kelsey Warren lives in a Tony development in Dallas. In a 23,000 square foot mansion with a bowling alley and a hidden recording studio back behind a bookshelf with a door that slides away, no kidding. And he's a patron of the musical arts scene in Austin. And well, in Texas generally, and maybe outside. I mean, he's got in his little secret music room, he's got drumsticks that have been signed by all the Eagles, even the dead one. And he's got something that was signed by Jackson Brown, because the Wall Street Journal did a profile on him that you can't read, because, you know, firewall, because profit, because capitalism, because Merca, because freedom. Energy Transfer Partners. Yes, thank you, BT Blom. And he just sits there in his little 23,000 square foot mansion while young women get their arms blown open. But he's heralded as a patron of the arts. Remember that name. Kelsey Warren. That's the bad guy behind all the agony on the freezing plains of North Dakota. A few notes coming in. Steve in New York says, I'm willing to have an open mind about gravity. Talking about Benito Cheeto's open mind about climate change. Steve continues and says, I can't wait until the Trumpansie chants of lock her up toward Hillary turn to string him up as the Trumpansies begin shouting at him. But they won't, Steve. They won't. They don't care. Like I said last night, this was just a yawp. They screamed at whatever ugly, hateful thing he said, and they nodded and nudged and winked at whatever vile goddamn Klansman or neo-Nazi he associated himself with. Because they really are Trumpansies. Atne ute aitbre, if you one what I eanme, and they just want to watch shit break. Even as it turns out, if it's their own lives. Really. It's kind of pathetic. Because, you know, in one of its more violent moments, a chimpanzee will tear the living shit out of something. Or someone. Or some other critter. They kind of manifest their nearness to humanity that way. Very few other animals will destroy something simply for the sake of destruction, but a chimpanzee in a rage, yeah. But they won't yell that at him, Steve. And they won't yell if he doesn't build a wall. And they won't yell if he doesn't put 11 million people in concentration camps. Now, they might get a mite testy, because Mike Pence will get a mite testy if they don't, if the Trump administration, I have a hard time saying that, doesn't really crack the whip over the heads of women about their reproductive organs and do something about, you know, all of those homosexuals that are, you know, threatening their good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered marriages, is that they keep getting divorced from at a rate of about 50%. That will matter to them. They might take to the streets if Paul Ryan comes after their Social Security and their Medicare. But then they also think they can trust the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini to protect them and veto anything that Paul Ryan wants that the Republican Congress that they goddamn well send to Washington votes to do to them. don't write to me and tell me none of that makes any sense. I know it doesn't make any sense. But we're talking about the thought processes, such as they are, of Trumpanzees. Clarence writing in says, I heard on the webnet that Trump has a monetary stake in the Dakota Pipeline. That energy company you mentioned, he's supposed to have a $1 million investment. Do you know if this is true? I don't know any more than you do, Clarence. I keep seeing the same thing. Wouldn't surprise me. Man's got tentacles all over the place. Octo-Trump. Gonna be an interesting 4 years. Very interesting indeed. And then we come back to this. Because, you know, here at 11 minutes past the hour. Oh, and by the way, let's check in and keep up. Thank you, John. Thank you very kindly, John, for jumping in. And thank you, Ralphs, for jumping in. That takes us down to $25 to go on Chris's challenge. And that means we've got $225 to go to get out of the hole because, you know, zero last night. Thank you very much indeed. Gerald pointing out, if by interesting you actually mean terrifying, then... Yeah, I'd agree. And I do. That's what I mean. Yeah, this is going to be terrifying. I saw some member, I was wandering around Facebook. I saw some member of the Kumbaya Brigade, of course, necessarily, you know, she hates Hillary Clinton. But she was decrying how aggrieved progressive liberals, Democrats, whatever, are behaving just like the teabaggers did when Obama won. Kumbaya, my lord. Kumbaya. Ow! What? You're still conscious? We're going to have to get a bigger stick. No, the fact of the matter is, it's not the same thing, and it's not just like that. Why? Well, for starters, Barack Obama won elections. Donald Trump didn't. Secondly, Barack Obama did not campaign at any time on questions of who he was going to personally imprison, deport, or walls that he was going to build, or leverage, you know, proto-fascist, fascist hate groups. The Angry Indian just sent me a couple of links. USA Today. Trump's win could be a victory for Dakota Access Pipeline. That's one. The second. Being the Dallas News. A function of the Dallas Morning News, a real journalism outlet, regardless of what one thinks of the quality thereof, they're actually a real paper. Financial interest between Donald Trump and Dakota Access Pipeline goes both ways. Kinky. It cites a Guardian report, Energy Transfer Partners donated, Kelsey Warren, the guy in the 23,000-square-foot mansion, donated $103,000 to the Trump presidential campaign, donated $66,800 to the Republican National Committee. He over-donated to Trump directly. I'm trying to. I'm checking the Guardian link now. The story says Donald Trump's close financial ties to Energy Transfer Partners. Operators, yada, 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 have been laid bare, with the presidential candidate invested in the company and receiving more than $100,000 in campaign contributions. He has between $500,000 and $1 million invested in Energy Transfer Partners, with a further $500,000 to $1 million holding in Phillips 66, which will have a 25% stake in the Dakota Access Project once completed. This is from financial disclosure forms related to related to the election process. So, thanks, Angry. I think that kind of answers the question, doesn't it? Now, conflict of interest? See, this is why we maintain the fiction of blind trusts. No one actually believes that a president's investments are, that the president doesn't actually know, you know, what's in it. But we maintain that fiction so as to create the appearance of propriety. Well, apparently, Benito Cheeto says that's all out the window. He, Trump, can do as he see fit, because, as he said, the president cannot have a conflict of interest. Which, for those of you old enough, and most of us are, to recall, immediately sends us screaming, because it's almost a direct take off of Richard M. Nixon's statement to David Frost that if the president does it, it's not illegal. Right. So there's that. And now there's also this.
My emergency is that you guys are full of shit. Get your shit together. Get out of our country, you fucking spicks, pieces of shit. Goodbye. Fuck off.
That is a recording on voicemail that was left on a Denver-based immigration law firm's system. The Denver-based immigration law firm then turned the voicemail over to the Southern Poverty Law Center. The Southern Poverty Law Center is doing a better job than anybody else of cataloging the outbreak of economic anxiety that seems to be sweeping over this nation. For those of you who had the over-under for 2 weeks after the election, the number is 701. 701 documented cases of harassment, threats, etc. by Trumpanzees. Just between November 9th and Wednesday, November 16th, well, here's how it breaks out. Anti-immigrant events, 206. Anti-black events, 151. Anti-LGBT, 80. Swastika vandalism, 60. Anti-Muslim, 51. And anti-woman, 36. Meanwhile, anti-Trump incidents have risen all the way to 27. Southern Poverty Law Center quotes from Tennistan. My American-born grandsons were told by some white kids that my grandsons will be getting a ticket out of the U.S. soon. My grandsons are of Asian Hispanic heritage. Washington State. The day a racial slur was discovered spray-painted on the Spokane's Martin Luther King Jr. Family Outreach Center, dozens of people gathered in solidarity to denounce the act and paint over the red graffiti. Boston. As I walked home tonight, a man on the street decided he didn't like my face. You think that's funny, dirty bitch? I'll spit on you, you dirty bitch. I can smell the Africa on you. Also in the liberal commonwealth, a friend of mine is a Muslim who wears a scarf on her head, not a hijab, along with dresses that go to the ground. It's obvious she's Muslim. At the subway stop, someone passed by her and said that Trump is going to kick her out of the country. On November 14th, a professor of Native American studies found a flyer on his bulletin board on his door that said, "Are you sick of anti-white propaganda in college? You are not alone." Because, see, the neo-Nazis are compiling lists, boys and girls. Of undesirable intellectuals. Mm-hmm. Of the 701 incidents documented, the largest single place where they have taken, where they've occurred, K through 12 schools. How's that for chilling? At 129 businesses, at 114 colleges and universities, on the street, 82, on private property, 72, and while driving, 42. Sixteen-year-old African-American student at Monte Vista High School in Danville, California, went to the bathroom during fifth period on Wednesday and spotted the words whites and colored scrawled on the wall over the urinal. Really? Down in Kentucky, Stan, a man got a letter that said, "The most important thing is for our children to grow up in a pure white Christian environment. It's not clear why you would have a nigger bitch in your house. We believe all races should be separate in the United States of America." And, of course, you know, watch this space, because there's going to be more. Of course there are going to be more. Gerald pointing out, "God damn it, I'm going to have to carry a gun to protect myself from the Trumpansies. And I'm a pasty-faced, doughy white guy." I would be lying to you if I said that the notion had not also occurred to me. That it was time to ditch my values and buy a damn gun. But I can't. I can't. If I go and I buy a gun now, it means that I'm, it kind of means that I'm anticipating some point in time where I'm going to have to kill somebody. And short of a war, I don't have that in me. Now, maybe you'll tell me that I'm just I'm just not being realistic. But everything we ever said about handguns and guns generally before this awful disgusting excuse for an attempt at a human being was elected, well, not really, was put in position to be made president by the Electoral College. Man, that's a mouthful, but that's the truth of it. It's still true. If some Trumpansy decides it's your time, unless they're just a terrible shot, you're not going to get a chance. That's just a fact. And if you do get a chance, what are you going to do? You're going to shoot back? What if, you know, what if there are innocents around? What then? It would be, I don't know, maybe it would be short-term satisfying, but not in the long term. Oh, I know. Gerald says I'm serious. And I'm serious, too. I seriously thought about it. But, A, and I guess this is a good thing, A, I can't afford to go out and buy one. Remember, this is listener-supported radio. Everything goes to keeping us on the air. But I understand the temptation. I just wouldn't feel comfortable having one in the home. I mean, I have to be consistent. I repeat to my children the truth that people with guns in the home are more likely to have those guns used on them than use them against someone else. This is verifiable. This is not subject to debate. This is reality. So I guess I'm just going to be out there. Okay, so I'm saying all this, but really I'm going to go get a gun because we just don't want the Trumpansies to know it. Another outbreak of economic anxiety, this one. At Spanish Lake Primary School in Geismar, Louisiana. I said Spanish Lake Primary School. Remember the that list there that indicated that a lot of this stuff is happening at K-12 schools? Eight-year-old Jordan Jackson was trying to defend his four-year-old baby sister from a gang of older white children, the eldest of whom was 13 years old, going after a four-year-old little girl, throwing mulch at them. Eight-year-old Jordan Jackson asked the kids to please stop. That's when the children shoved him to the ground and body slammed him and said, "You need to go back to the cotton farm." He was hospitalized with a broken arm and a concussion and what has been diagnosed as post-concussion syndrome. Eight years old and 4 years old. They created a GoFundMe page to help pay for his medical expenses because, you know, Louisiana. Meanwhile, at Maggiano's Little Italy in Washington, D.C. last Saturday, the neo-Nazis tweeted out photographs of themselves giving the stiff-arm salute. God damn. Amazing, isn't it? I mean, courtesy of the Atlantic, think about that 8-year-old little boy and that 4-year-old little girl while you listen to Richard Spencer, head of the National Policy Institute, at their meeting last Saturday.
Hail Trump! Hail our people! Hail victory! No one will honor us for losing gracefully. No one mourns the great crimes committed against us. For us, it is conquer or die. The mainstream media, or perhaps we should refer to them in the original German, Lügenpresse. It's not just that they are leftist and cucks. It's not just that many are genuinely stupid. Indeed, one wonders if these people are people at all. Or instead, soulless Gollum, animated by some dark power to repeat whatever talking point John Oliver stated the night before. To be white is to be a striver, a crusader, an explorer, and a conqueror. We build, we produce, we go upward. And we recognize the central lie of American race relations. We don't exploit other groups. We don't gain anything from their presence. They need us and not the other way around. Within the very blood in our veins as children of the sun lies the potential for greatness. That is the great struggle we are called to. We are not meant to live in shame.
I was going to let this go to its end, but goddamn, that line, children of the sun, just drives me batshit. Because, see, that's how these neo-Nazis refer to themselves, children of the sun. The white people are children of the sun because everybody else is mud people. Which is kind of a twisted take on the old anthropologically understood notion of Earth Mother, Sky Father. But really? White people as children of the sun? Wouldn't you like to take this pasty-faced, doughy little 40-year-old asshole, strip him naked, and stand him in the Bahamas in, say, you know, even just February, and see how much of a child of the sun he is? I was out for less than 2 hours without a hat on Grand Turk, and by the end of the evening, I looked like Captain Christopher Pike with everything but the chair that went beep, beep, beep. I was burnt to a cinder, children of the sun. Dumbasses. White people are white people because they eventually migrated so far north that they lost the melanin in their systems, and it wasn't that long ago, like 7,000 years or less. In the last 5 to 7,000 years, everybody wandering around Europe was nice and brown. I mean, the one thing you can say about white people is we're fucking mutants. I mean, we are. We didn't have to be, we didn't have to have so much protection against the sun, and so therefore we lost the melanin in our, and you know, the goddamn freckles on my arm sort of prove what a mutant I am. And even a shirtless day in otherwise temperate Appalachia in, say, June is enough to, you know, put a few more notches in the sun's gun relative to me and melanoma. I mean, you know, skin cancer, not Trump's wife. She's a very intelligent woman. She can say, hey, sailor, in 6 different languages. Okay, children of the sun. Jesus Christ. You know, they're dangerous as hell. They're meaner than snakes. But you know, the other part of Nazism is they're stupid. They're mean, but they're stupid.
Shame and weakness and disgrace. We were not meant to beg for moral validation from some of the most despicable creatures to ever populate the planet. We were meant to overcome all of it, because that is natural and normal for us. The press has clearly decided to double down and wage war against the legitimacy of Trump and the continued existence of white America. But they are really opening up the door for us. America was, until this past generation, a white country designed for ourselves and our posterity.
What the ever-loving...
See, that's how white privilege works. You can just sort of disappear a few millennia of indigenous, successful living in and on the land. Because whiteness. And to the extent that the word design was utilized, yeah, well, I guess we can call slavery a design. Mm-hmm. There's a whole room full of economic anxiety.
It is our creation. It is our inheritance, and it belongs to us.
And they get up and they start giving the stiff arm salute. And the first guy who gives the stiff arm salute, another guy walks up to him and starts patting him on the back. I'm so proud of you. Jesus Christ. Oh, yes, that was. The Christopher Pike was our obligatory Star Trek reference for the night. Thank you for reminding me, Gerald. Now, by the way, Richard Spencer says that he was being ironic. That every last bit of what you just heard, which was part of like an hour-long harangue, but was only 3 minutes of it, every last bit of that was just ironic. And, what was the other phrase he used? Comedic? No, not comedic.
wacky? No. Jesus. But, no. Sorry. Note coming in from Kim in Malin and Kim in New Jersey. Having dinner with relatives who voted for a Hitler is not on our schedule this year. In fact, I'm likely never to see my in-laws again outside of a funeral setting. I can't bring myself to socialize with people who voted for the two racist Nazi bastards who will work to reverse my marriage equality, to privatize my Medicare and Social Security. I know we're not alone in these intense feelings. Can someone please explain how Horn family members can even consider being around people who voted for such a reprehensible POS? Well, Malin and Kim, I will not suppose to speak for everyone, and I don't have to at this holiday. But there are people who have to. That's all there is to it. Because they just have to. Malin and Kim continue, I understand that not all those attending the family gathering are post supporters, but knowing even that just some in attendance voted against the very essence of our lives as a gay couple makes it simply impossible to be around these people. So it must be the gay thing that makes it so intolerable for us. It is so deeply personally offensive when people you otherwise think of as decent human beings turn out to be okay with voting for the racism that defines Post and the homophobia that defines Pence. Little neck geek. That's how we're going. Vice President Pence, old neck geek. I can't answer it for people can only answer that for themselves. Arnold says, not going to see any of our family for Thanksgiving because the election can't wait for the show. At least we all support each other here. Well, mostly. We try. Let's, and there's ever, you know, there's ever so much more to go into. I mean, 6 years ago, one of the people who will be an elector for, 6 years ago. Well, that ain't hardly fair, Bob. Yeah, it is. 6 years ago, Dennis Scranton, 92 years old, of Miles City, Montana. He's a Trump elector for the Electoral College. But, okay, 7 years ago, in a report by the Billings Gazette, Miles Scranton, then 85 years old, responding to the idea of gay people getting to have the same marriage equality as straight people, said... I think fruits are decorative. Hang up where they can be seen and appreciated. Call Wyoming for display instructions. Of course, it goes almost without saying that the reference to Wyoming was because of what happened to Matthew Shepard there. You know, crucified on a fence outside Laramie. Now that he's been caught and people have been reminded of what he said, he's hiding behind his age. Hey, don't forget, I'm 93 year old. I come from a different era. I hadn't heard of anyone being homosexual until I joined the Navy, and then I encountered them. We were raised with good morals. Apparently, Dennis Scranton. Dennis Scranton never heard of the first law of holes. When you're in one, for Christ's sake, stop digging. Meanwhile, when confronted about the remarks, the chairman of the Montana GOP, Jeff Esman, said, "It's a ceremonial function. If people choose to be outraged, I guess they can be. It's a free country. Some people mellow as they age. Some people say I'm over X years of age and I can say whatever I want. Master Scranton has taken the second path." So the chairman of the Montana GOP won't even put any distance between himself and a 92-year-old bigot. Well, that's interesting. The production computer just... up and died. Let's see what happens when we restart it. Note coming from Robert Nas. Hello from Australia. Any of these fuckers want to spend a summer in Central Australia and do some crating are welcome to try it. I'd give them 9 days before they're all dead. God, I hate Nazis. Always wanting to drag us back into the Dark Ages. P.S. In Doctor Who, the Daleks were always Nazis, wanting to exterminate every life form that wasn't a Dalek. They even had a stiff arm salute with sink plunger attachment. In one Dalek story, the Daleks started fighting each other because one group had mutated and were no longer considered pure. I got a link there that I can't play. Sorry, Don. I wish I could. The computer just, you know, took a powder. Thank you, Vince. Thank you for jumping in. We are we have finished Chris's challenge, and now we now Vince has us $175 only left, only $175 left in fundraising to get out of the hole this evening. And now it's $165, courtesy of Brother Deacon Gerald of the Building and Grounds Committee. Let's run over to the Skype line and check in and see who's calling from area code 702. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
Hey, John, what's happening?
Oh, I'm just... listening to you in your rarest of forms today.
I feel kind of well done, if the truth be known.
Well,
or at least done to a tender turn.
Well, you wouldn't qualify for a Klan meeting anymore, I guess. No. But, I was kind of calling in on some of the earlier stuff you was talking about, because I was reading some pretty hot and heavy articles today. You know, the big rage right now is the
emoluments clause.
Yeah, and the big stink that's up now, of course, is that people are wondering just what Ivanka's doing, because she's been hand over fist with almost everything he's been doing. I mean, she sat in on the Japanese ambassador. She was in on a phone call with the. Buenos Aires, I think, or was it Argentina or Brazil or something like that. She was hand in glove with Trump during that conversation. And I read a rather long article today that it was partially singing her praises, and part of it starting to ascribe to her almost like a Dick Cheney-ish, you know, hand behind the throne thing.
Hand up. Never mind where the hand goes. Let's just leave that as read.
And, I mean, you know, it's like, here's a person that has no, you know, no official standing, but seems to be just all deep into all the decision making. If I remember the articles correctly, they say that she was one of the ones that talked Trump into getting Pence as the VP pick. And, when I was told that, yesterday, I was like, say what? And it's like, you know, that's, she's been running, you know, she got really tight running the campaign with that Kellyanne Conway woman, and the two of them together are part of what tied Trump down, got him to shut his mouth up a little bit.
Oh, I loved Kellyanne Conway's response after, Benito Cheeto's tantrum got, outed. Well, that's just not true. That never happened. Because, you know, she can just make shit up.
Sure. It's all great. And, you know, I had a rather fascinating time. You know, I'm in Texas here the last day or so. And you have never seen such happy people in Texas in the last week or so, week and a half, 2 weeks, because apparently they found a big old batch of oil and natural gas in Midland.
Hoo-wee!
They're going to dig that shit up.
How did George Bush miss it when he was digging around for it?
I have no clue. And I'm saying to myself, you know, they say, oh, it's $1 trillion worth, because I was talking to guys, you know, these sand haulers and stuff that, you know, they've been kind of crying the blues the last, you know, a few months, you know, because of the drop in oil prices and the cutback. They're saying, oh, now things are going to get good again. And as soon as Trump gets rid of them damn subsidies for those freaking, all them wind turbines and things, these oil fields will be back to humming and being. And I'm going, oh boy, acid rain, anybody?
Yeah, but they don't know. I mean, they can think that and they can kind of get them off, and, but it ain't got, no. Do these fools not understand it's a global market? I mean, with the Dakota Access Pipeline or the Keystone XL Pipeline, it wasn't going to change gas prices by a damn penny. It doesn't inure to the benefits of anybody but the investors in Energy Transfer Partners and the guy with the hidden recording studio behind his bookshelf in Dallas.
Yeah, but Bob, you gotta have that money for those, for that artsy fartsy stuff, man. You know, you quit busting that man's chops. He's supporting the arts. He's supporting them homosexuals with their paintbrushes and their body paint. Come on now. I'm being sarcastic. I should.
I understand.
But yeah, no, I was, like I said, I mean, I just, I was having such a grand old time here because, you know, it's, these people just, I mean, they're happy as hell down here. They're dancing and talking all kinds of good stuff. And then, you know, and we have, and like I said, I had a fascinating conversation about this Ivanka chick. And it's like, oh, she's a smart one. She'll advise him and everything. And I'm going, these are the same son of bitches that want women to be barefoot and pregnant, but let it be some hot rich chick, and all of a sudden they just don't seem to mind anymore. And it's just, I get so tickled. I think is the appropriate term.
And, yeah, plum tickled.
Yeah, there's the plummy, the fruity thing going on again. But yeah, I was like, you know, I'm just, and, you know, they're talking, you know, and I believe he made it today, or was it yesterday, that he made the comment that, see if I can get it phrased right. It was baked into the price when the people voted for me. About his business dealings and stuff.
Yeah, because everybody knew it was fully disclosed and everything.
Yeah. And I'm going, okay, now, you know, this guy is going to be doing stuff, you know, and like I said, I mean, the complaint, one of the complaints was that he was, you know, talking to the guy from Argentina, the president of Argentina, a guy named Cagro, a little podcast I listened to, he broke it down pretty intensely, is that the local city government had not authorized or passed the necessary permits for his new hotel complex down in Buenos Aires. But then he got elected president, and the president of Argentina was like, uh-oh, we need to keep on the good side of this fella. So through a set of connections with Eric Trump, they arranged for a conversation with Donald to remind him, and then eventually, and very quickly, he got his permits that he needed. And now everybody's talking about all these, you know, conflict of interest. You know, we're going to have a president that's got, you know, he's got his fingers in all kinds of things. And hey, you know, I mean, what did he do it for the good of the country? Did he do it good for his business contacts? So corruption is on the rise. But I thought I'd bring that to your attention, see if you enjoyed it.
Oh, I did. I did. And I think we're going to have a lot more enjoyment as we go.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'll talk to you later.
All right, John, you take care. Be safe down there. It can get kind of weird real fast.
Oh, yeah. It's getting real grandiose here.
All right, I'll talk to you later. Be good now.
Bye-bye.
Bye. John, who spends his days going up and down the roads hither, thither, and yon throughout this here once great nation. Tell you what, let's take a little minute for a break, because I have filibobstered practically the entire first 2 hours of this Titanic Tuesday because we've had so much Titanic information with which to cope. It is, after all, Tuesday, and therefore that means time for the Green News Report. And we have $165 to go in fundraising this evening. Please, can we get out of this godforsaken hole? We'll take all the help we can stand. And thanks for everybody jumping in. It's how we keep independent media alive and going. This is listener-supported conversation radio, by Jove. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Getting fat. It's Tuesday, November 21, 2016.
We have seen at least 4 gunshot wounds, 3 of them I know to the face and head.
Police escalate tactics against Dakota Access Pipeline protesters.
This is the equivalent of taking 1.3 million cars off the road.
Canada moves to phase out coal use by 2030. Record low sea ice in a freakishly warm Arctic, plus...
Sorry it took so long to get to this point.
Obama administration cancels oil leases on Blackfeet Nation lands.
All of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
And this is still not out in mainstream media. I'd like to know why.
Because it's the mainstream media. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, you know what else is not out on the mainstream media?
What?
The fact that the Arctic is 36 degrees warmer than it should be this time of year.
Yep, something bizarre is indeed going on in the Arctic. First, the extent of sea ice is at a record low for this time of year, despite 24-hour darkness at the North Pole. According to scientists, that's partly due to unusually high air temperatures and partly due to unusually high ocean temperatures, both blocking ice formation from above and below. In the Arctic, as you said, it's more than 36 degrees Fahrenheit above normal, but next door in Siberia, it's 60 degrees below normal. The Weather Channel calls it, quote, one of the most bizarre juxtapositions ever seen. Also bizarre, down in Antarctica, for the first time since scientists began keeping track, sea ice at the South Pole is also at a record low for this time of year. They say much more data is needed to understand what's going on with this simultaneous decline in sea ice in both polar regions.
The extent of global sea ice is so low right now, it is literally off the charts. It is like nothing we have ever seen in the past 40 years. Scientists are actually freaking out about this because it's not even close.
Meanwhile, in North Dakota, law enforcement escalated tactics against unarmed activists over the weekend at the site of the protests against the Dakota Access Pipeline near the Standing Rock Sioux Reservation, firing rubber bullets, tear gas, and water cannons in below-freezing temperatures at the protesters.
We have seen at least 4 gunshot wounds, 3 of them I know to the face and head, rubber bullets. Right now we're trying to keep people warm. We're trying to get them decontaminated.
7 people were hospitalized with serious injuries. Hundreds reported injured. Protesters are trying to stop the pipeline, which the company rerouted away from the city of Bismarck's water supply to a half mile north of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe's water supply.
So don't endanger the white people, but don't worry about those American Indians, I guess.
Or, as Twitter user Paige Smith said, nothing says happy Thanksgiving like water cannoning Native Americans protecting the last of their land from Americans.
Oh, man.
But in Montana, the Interior Department has canceled oil and gas leases in an area of the Lewis and Clark National Forest that is sacred to the Blackfeet Nation of Montana and Canada. Interior Secretary Sally Jewell, in a press conference, praised Devon Energy for voluntarily relinquishing the untouched leases that it had obtained back in the 1980s. And Jewell said,
sorry it took so long to get to this point. We need to have thoughtful balance of energy development, but also conservation and the recognition of sacred sites as we develop the resources around this great nation.
On Monday, the Interior Department also banned new mining claims on 30,000 acres of public lands just outside Yellowstone National Park in Montana for 2 years, while the Departments of Interior and Agriculture evaluate whether to extend that ban on new mining claims for an additional 20 years. Also, the Obama administration is moving quickly to protect the Arctic. The Interior Department has announced that all new offshore oil and gas leases will be blocked in the U.S. Arctic for 5 years.
And by the Obama administration moving quickly, you mean moving after 8 years of being in office.
Yes, a Trump administration could overturn that five-year ban, but it would take years.
Well, it's Thanksgiving. I guess I should be thankful for something.
Finally, Canada is ditching coal. On Monday, Canada announced it will phase out virtually all of its coal-fired power plants by 2030 to meet Canada's international commitments to cut greenhouse gas emissions under the UN Paris Agreement. According to Canada's Environment Minister, Catherine McKenna,
this is the equivalent of taking 1.3 million cars off the road. Our goal is to make Canada's electricity 90% non-emitting by 2030.
Well, there you go. That's huge. I guess we here in America can all be thankful to Canada this Thanksgiving.
Yeah, thanks, Canada.
Thanks, Canada. And here's some tear gas for you, Native Americans. Thank you, Desi Doyen. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Thanks for all the lovely delight I found in your embrace. I'm thankful, though I know it's ending all too soon. And thanks for unforgettable nights.
6 minutes past the hour. This is at least one online home of the resistance. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Titanic Tuesday, the 22nd day of November 2016. Clarence writing in says, subject line, we don't need them. What you are about to read in this email is only in jest. Bob, I would like to see the reaction response if the mass deportation incarceration was carried out. How many of those alt-Reich right creatures would jump onto those massive agricultural plantations, vineyards, and farms? The exposure to the elements would immediately give them the reality check about their superiority. Yeah, not to mention the nation would starve to death. I get it. Oh, I do. Because all you have to do is take one look at 40-year-old Richard Spencer in his little three-piece suit, and you know this guy is useless, absolutely, positively useless for supporting his own miserable existence in his privileged skin. I mean, that's kind of the history of the colonization of this continent. That's how you wind up with slavery, among other things. White folks couldn't survive and even feed themselves. That's what happens in the Massachusetts Bay Colony of what was then referred to as Northern Virginia. No, really. And that's what happened at Jamestown. And then it happened. Meanwhile, there'd been, you know, a few millennia of successful management of forest and farmland that the colonizers were actually too stupid to understand was managed land. But oh well. And yes, I will go ahead and remind folks that we got $165 to go just to get out of the hole. So that tomorrow, prayer meeting Wednesday, we've only got another $200 to go. A reminder, Thanksgiving evening, if you've had your fill of Thanksgiving dinner and even had more of your fill of your crazy old Trumpansy uncle or whatever, come on over. There will be live programming here Thursday night. And let's go check in with the Angry Indian. What do you know, Angry?
What's going on, man?
I particularly love it when my computer crashes mid-program, so, you know, I'm just having a blast here. Nothing like broadcasting on ancient equipment.
Yeah, it's not fun. I dig it. Nazis in the White House. So what are we going to do about it? You know, because it gets me how a lot of my white pals, because I'm not going to lie, 97%, because my wife and I did a count, 97% of the people that we deal with are straight up Caucasians. And, you know, they all claim to hate Trump. And such and so on. But now that Trump is in, we went out to dinner here a couple of nights ago, and, you know, I started hearing about black-on-black crime.
Really?
Imagine that.
Oh, yeah.
And what was the over-under on the mention of the city of Chicago? About 10 seconds?
Oh, yeah, Chicago got mentioned within a split second. And when I pointed out the FBI stats that his wife could pull up on her iPhone while we were sitting there eating, and I said to him, you know, because he quoted, well, 87% of black males kill themselves in America. I'm like, yeah. And about 97% of white people kill each other. Look it up. It's your government. It's your government, you know, law enforcement agency. Look at it. Then the conversation, you know, leveled out. Now, this cat is totally cool. I mean, you know, he's okay. But, you know, it still comes down to the same goddamn fucking thing. I'm a nice guy. Why don't you believe me? I'm not a bigot. Why don't you believe me? And it's like, I do believe you. But you're telling me that the next guy who is telling you that he's a bigot isn't all that bad, and I have nothing to fear. Because you don't have any fucking thing to be concerned about. You know, and it's like, you know, the only time we even talk about these sorts of issues is when I bring it up. But we've been friends for what now? Going on 11 fucking years. And you know, I have to hear about black-on-black crime when I'm, you know, when really your wife is talking about all the fucking, white-on-black crime that's been going on and, you know, Caucasian on Spanish-speaking Indians crime and such and so on. And telling people to get the fuck out of the country, even though they've been here for three or four goddamn generations, that Spanish speaking, you know, people. And telling native fucking folks, not just at the Dakota's Access Pipeline, but in goddamn Seattle, you know, when I was up there a couple of days ago, telling fucking Indians to get the fuck out of the country. You know, yelling out of cars.
Yeah.
Get the fuck out the country. Here in Portland. I mean, I haven't heard, you know, anti-native stuff so far, but I've been hearing them yell at the students, you know, go the fuck back where you come from. So, you know, I mean, and now we got Sieg Heiling and all this kind of shit, and now Trump speaks up to say something. Yeah, because he's trying to save face. He's trying to control the monster in which he fucking gave flight to, because he didn't create it. It was already there. You know, it's always been there. You know, it goes up and down like a Bunsen burner, you know, up and down depending on how bad the economy fucking goes, which is why they, you know, white liberals anyway, like to talk a lot about, and you've been saying this. Well, if they take, you know, listen to the white working class, then none of this would have happened. Well, that's a part of it. But if you don't talk about the racism, then none of the other shit matters. You know, Samuel Gompers was considered as left as could goddamn be. He was racist as hell. He didn't like black people, didn't want them in the unions, hated the Chinese, you know, used the Chinese Exclusion Act that was still kind of quasi being observed at the time as a way to protect white workers. I know we're told on the left to, you know, praise him, but he was a bigot.
Yeah.
So, you know, what happens next?
It's a fine question. I mean, there's this breakout angry. There really are distinctions between a purely Trump agenda and a Republican congressional agenda. I honestly believe there are. It may wind up being differences that are so narrow that you can't slip a playing card between them. But, for instance, you know, it's not just, I think we need to be careful, it's not just Trump. It's Trump and Paul Ryan. It's Trump and Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell. It's Trump and Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell and John Roberts. Does that make any sense?
Well, it makes any sense when we're talking about the country itself. You know, yeah, sure. You know, in terms of keeping this.
I mean, they're one way or another, they're all going to manifest. They're all going to manifest to some degree the hopes, dreams, and aspirations of the likes of Richard Spencer, because they've been doing that for years. Now, you know, you talk about the reasonable conversations you can have, and then there's the unreasonable ones. I mean, I go and I just kind of look around Facebook. Just on a hunch here and there. And so far, you know, the little boy in Louisiana that I was talking about a couple of minutes ago got a concussion and a broken arm for asking a bunch of white school children to quit being mean to his 4-year-old sister. And, you know, you won't find that story on any Trump voter pages saying, God damn it, you know, we may have voted for him, but this has to stop.
Oh, hell no.
It's just not going to be there.
You don't hear too many liberals saying that either. You hear them saying that it's unfortunate. You don't hear anyone really saying it, and I'm being straight up.
I know, and we have our conversations, and when we have our conversations, I kind of, you know, you work in certain words the way Michelangelo worked in stone, so I try to let you work with them, but, you know, that really brings a great big, oh, for fuck's sake, out of me, because how can you look at that and not say it has to stop? How can you describe that as unfortunate? I mean, goddamn.
Well, I just told you, you know, while this guy's wife is sitting there, and they would not... I suppose they consider themselves to be liberal progressives, but his wife was talking about the violence. And then he, you know, hit the table and said, well, what about black men killing each other? And my wife and I were like, oh, okay.
I like to think, no offense, that, you know, I mean, that's such a goddamn red herring. That is such a canard. How does an intelligent person even let that out of their mouths?
It happens, and it happens. Happens all the time, and it's not always liquor, and it's not always cocaine, and, you know, I mean, it's you know, there's always excuses for why these things happen, and then a lot of people accuse me of saying things that make people say things like that. Just like about 4 weeks ago, you know, got into, again, supposed to be, you know, group of white folks, quite a few of them are Europeans who are married to Americans, and I'm is that a house thing, and, you know, I'm standing there with my wine, I'm being cool, you know, such and so on. Somebody asked me about Malcolm X, and I didn't want to talk about Malcolm X, but he insisted on talking about Malcolm X. I tried to change the subject. He didn't want to change the subject. So then, you know, he wants to talk about American racism right now, and I'm like, well, look, you know, you see what's happening with the campaign, so, you know, it was more likely it was going to happen with the election. And then his thing was, well, you know, if Obama had respected white people, and if black people respected what white people have done for them, then perhaps, you know, you wouldn't have all this anger. And it's like, you know, where's this, you know, where the fuck is this coming from? You know, where's this coming from? And every one of these people consider themselves to be liberal. And then at first they're like, well, why are you even asking him this? And then, you know, it got to the point where six out of the group decided that, yeah, black people don't show enough respect. That, you know, Obama was somehow, you know, hinting that black people, you know, that black people were owed something. And that, you know, even though he never fucking said anything like that. And that because of that, that, you know, that white people had a right to be angry because they've done enough. And then these are supposed to be liberals. I didn't say a fucking thing. I try not to even bring up religion or goddamn politics when I fucking go out. You know, but these are supposed to be people that I've known. Some of them I've known for more than fucking, you know, 10, 12 years. You know, and it's like, well,
and no offense, but it's only yeah, you do. You don't walk around with, you know, it's not like you've repurposed your old ask me about herbal life button, you know, ask me about racial politics in America. But, you know, if you are known for holding certain positions, people will come to you and say, what about, I mean, I had it happen to me.
But it's not really that. It's not really that. I'm mixed, and when a lot of people see me, they don't really know what the fuck is going on. And then folks who know that, you know, I'm part Jewish especially, you know, there's an assumption that when you're African and mixed, or when you're Latino or Native, you know, and mixed with European, that you're somehow, you know, supposed to be on the side of white people. And there's an assumption made about that. And then, like I said, if you look at any of these other, you know, Don Lemon, Lester Holt, any of them, I don't look any different than they do. And, you know, when I come around, you know, people of color and so on, and immigrants and so on, they don't trust me. They don't say, oh, yeah, well, here's a brother. They say, nah, here's a guy that lives and speaks and eats with white people. You know, and we can't really understand what the fuck he wants from us. I get the same fucking coldness that a white guy gets when he walks into the fucking room. Somebody, you know, like a typical Portlandia around here, somebody wears shorts all fucking year long and he's got one of these fucking chin beards and shit with rubber bands and smells of weed all the fucking time and baseball caps and t-shirts and all that type of hood.
Don't forget the waxed mustache, Angry. Don't forget the waxed mustache.
Well, I don't see that too much where I go.
Oh, no shit. That's a thing, I thought. Yeah. But
it's a thing, yeah. You know, but I usually, when I see that, it usually comes along with a holler.
Oh, okay.
I don't look at them, and they don't look at me. We just respect each other and stay the fuck out of each other's space, you know. You know, but what I'm trying to say is, you know, when folks see me, they just assume. They look at my shoes. They look at my bags, right? My nails and shit. And they're like, okay, he ain't one of us. You know what I'm saying? It's easier for me to deal with straight up boring ass supposed square white folks than it is for me to deal with my own goddamn people, even though I'm 10 times more fucking radical than they are. You know, so they don't understand that I understand the system better than they do because I actually walk in this bullshit. But when they deal with me, I left the ghetto, I motherfucking left. So when people come up to me, they basically are trying to find out where the fuck I'm at. Because if somebody like me is questioning someone like Trump and saying that the fucking system has always been fucked up and that it's fucked up, like here we got Thanksgiving coming up. Of course, my wife and I are invited to a bunch of shit, even though they know I'm fucking native. They know that the Dakota Access Pipeline thing is going on. They're still inviting me to a non-Thanksgiving Thanksgiving, which is a whole lot of bullshit. Because if I said to them, okay, well, you know, let's mark the motherfucking, you know, Kristallnacht by not having a Kristallnacht, you know, party, but we'll do it the same fucking night just because everybody else is off too.
Yeah,
that would be considered.
In some ways, I kind of feel better about the fact that, you know, we're just going to go over and have a nice meal. Yes, there will be turkey. Yes, I will make the dressing. But we're going to do it on Saturday, and you know, it takes a little bit. Probably the solidarity thing to do would be do nothing at all. As far as the Dakota Access Pipeline is concerned.
Not even that. The idea that, you know, we all know that the fucking Pequod being burned out during the Green Corn Dance by British, Dutch, motherfucking colonialists and a handful of fucking Indians and shit who didn't like that goddamn group and a couple of fucking traitors from their own group. They killed as many goddamn people as possible, burned them while they were doing their ceremony and fucking, you know, shot those that tried to run out. That's why there's so few of those people left today. And they complain about them being part African and part Puerto Rican and all that type of shit. But, the fucking thing is, it's a holiday that until, until this religious shit got put on it, you know, solely, you know, the whole fucking thing was, the original fucking onus of it was, thank God for giving us the fucking strength to wipe these goddamn savages out. So now we can relax and enjoy the turkey and the,
I mean, that's the origin. It really is. And you know, there were, and even Howard Zinn goes into it to a certain extent. You know, there were political dynamics going on, between the various tribes. There were, dynamics related to, the weapons trade because the British couldn't control the French who were more than happy to sell weapons to yada, and on and on and on. I mean, it was a hell of a lot more complicated than most people even know, and the dynamics at work aren't entirely clear unto this day, except for the fact that we know that the first thing that put those pressures in place, even before the Mayflower arrived, was the depopulation of the area, because the disease had already gotten here. And you know, when you've got a place that's depopulated, power vacuums happen, and you've got different peoples vying for the same hunk of land.
We're treading over touchy ground here because, you know, Dinesh D'Souza, who isn't even fucking from here, even though he's a Republican, who ideologically supports, you know, with all kinds of bullshit, pseudo intellectual bullshit, the racism of the fucking Republican Party, even though he is an anglicized, you know, a South Asian. who comes from a community where they speak English and that, you know, the, Britain is the, you know, the pinnacle of the fucking world. He came to the United States as a young man and decided that, you know, the racism here was the problem of niggas and spics and stupid fucking Indians who, you know, can't get their goddamn act together and can't, you know, be, you know, grateful to white people for basically saving us from our own savagery. Because he just went on television not too long ago and made the argument that disease did more fucking damage to Native America than Europeans ever fucking did, that there was no plan to get rid of us.
Who brought the disease?
That it was just an issue of disease.
Hmm? Who brought the disease?
Oh, no, that's about as far as he'll go. That's about as far as he'll go.
It's not like there was a spontaneous outbreak of fucking smallpox in the pre-Columbian, in the pre-Columbian Western Hemisphere.
Well, there are two guys that are actually making the argument, and you can find them on VDare.
Not VDare. Please not VDare.
That's not true. Well, remember, they think that that Europeans, not so much white people, because that's a stupid goddamn concept, but the idea of fucking Europeans, genetic Europeans being in South America and having founded all of the major civilization.
Oh, I know. And sadly enough, one of the exalted high mucky mucks of the Smithsonian is one of those people. I remember the conversation over the Ashaleian people and, oh, look, you know, Clovis kind of looks like an Ashaleian hand axe, or, you know, I forget exactly what the particulars are. That proves that Europeans are actually Indians. You know, goddamn, it's the second decade of the 21st century, Angry. Are we going to, why don't we just go full on Joseph Smith and declare him the Lost Tribes of Israel again?
It was talk about that. But see, here's the thing. You see Glenn Beck, who started a lot of this shit, he's now against it. Perhaps because they put fucking Mormons on the goddamn menu. So now he's decided that he doesn't like them any motherfucking more. And he's been running all over the media trying to fucking, you know, now say that Trump is dangerous. And it's like, well, where the fuck were you before?
Yeah, but it's not like he's stopped having David Barton on. He hasn't ended his relationship with him. And David Barton's one of the biggest purveyors of right wing revisionist white history this country. You know, he's a fake scholar. He's a fake academic. He makes up quotes from people, you know, like Abraham Lincoln and George Washington and Thomas Jefferson. I remember when Thomas Jefferson said, "I'd love to talk to you more about freedom for the Negro, but I must go to church." Yeah, shit like that. It ain't real. It's just not real. I don't think we know everything about, I mean, even, you know, expert anthropologists will tell you, we don't know everything about the migration of human beings into this hemisphere. But that does not include, oh, they were really white people after all.
Well, they're desperate. You know, we know this. It's been done before. The Nazis did it. You know, when it came to race, Stalin did it with politics. The Nazis did it with race. We just heard something. You played something earlier about children of the sun. Why don't you just say the black sun? You know, because that's what it is. And
yeah, straight out of Mein Kampf.
The Vril, the coming race. I just wrote about this, Nefers for Fascism. These motherfuckers talk about Vril, the coming race. It was a goddamn science fiction book in the 1880s that inspired fucking Goebbels and Hess, who slept with magnets under his fucking pillow, and every day he and his wife did astrology before he left the fucking house. You know, Hitler, who believed that, you know, God called him because he dodged a couple of fucking bullets and shit during World War I, lost his sight and got it back, and believed that God was sending him to, you know, bring back Germany, even though he was a fucking Austrian. You know, all of this madness is what you heard in that fucking piece of audio that you played earlier. This Francis X. Bushman, the white people are superior, and we don't really know this. It's in our gut, but we don't know this. There should be a white flag over the entire world. I read and listen to that goddamn bullshit. I know it. I've argued with these fuckers face to face. Why was I able to do that? Because when you're mixed, these motherfuckers want to figure out how somebody who's got nigger blood in them can fucking understand what the hell they're talking about. And they're willing usually to fucking sit and talk with me and explain their craziness.
Meanwhile,
that's what the fuck you just heard.
Meanwhile, you know, the word you just used brought poor little Brooke Baldwin over at Chicken Noodle News to tears, didn't it?
Yeah, to confuse us even more, because now they're going to play, oh my God, it hurts. The racism hurts so much. But did it hurt when the election was coming up? We're not going to talk about that. We're going to talk about you using it. We're going to talk about you lefty freaking racist freak. We're talking about you. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Mr. Baby Paul, routine. Rap number 14, white racist version. Go ahead, run the audio, man. You get.
Yeah, okay, so it's Brooke Baldwin talking with, it's another one of those let's yell at each other panels on Chicken Noodle News. A journalist by the name of Charles Kaiser talking about, you know, the racist stuff that has gone on so far. And then a right-wing POS named GOP consultant Paris Denard. And along the way, that word gets brought into the conversation. And I hope you can hear this, Angry. But then again, you've already heard it. So let's just roll it. Working. You know, one of these days I'm going to have to install like a Uniblab 10,000 here. Come on, Brooke.
Back to breaking news. President-elect Donald Trump just told the New York Times that he disavows a white supremacist group that's using his name to push its racist ideology. This comes after calls grew louder and louder for Trump to strongly condemn this meeting over the weekend of hundreds of white nationalists. They gathered in Washington, D.C., the Reagan building. This is just a couple of blocks from the White House. You hear the cheers to cheer on Trump's victory with a Nazi salute.
America was, until this past generation, a white country designed for ourselves and our posterity.
Now, we've already been through this, Angry, but just a quick observation, if I may. He can denounce these people till hell freezes over, Trump can, because it's all done with a wink and a nod. They're not going to denounce him. They know they're the reason that he's going to be inaugurated president, right?
Yep. And they plan to be there, too, with their guns.
And they'll be, but more importantly, they'll be there with their stiff arm salutes.
Yep. That's.
And I frankly think that's more important than their guns. The guns come later. Or the guns are already here. The guns are implied. The guns are as red. But when they're standing there at the inauguration, giving the stiff arm salute, I mean, do you think they'll actually do it? Do they have the guts to do it, or have they learned? Hey, ixnay on the elute say, we're almost ere they. Will they? You
well,
know,
as far as they're concerned, you know, this is a stepping stone, and he's okay with that.
Yeah,
you know, as long as he can get what he wants, he doesn't give a shit. You know.
Okay, so let me
he doesn't care.
Let me roll this again.
It is our creation. It is our inheritance, and it belongs to us. Hail Trump! Hail our people! Hail victory!
Our victory.
Let's bring in CNN political commentator and Trump supporter Paris Denard. Also, Charles Kaiser is with us. He's a CNN.com contributor and the author of multiple books, including The Cost of Courage, the story of how one French family fought the Nazis during the Paris occupation. Gentlemen, welcome. And
thank you.
Charles, let me just begin with you. I mean, now that you're hearing, we're getting some of the information coming out of this New York Times meeting that Trump has disavowed this particular group. Is that enough for you?
Well, I'm delighted that my Mr. Trump has visited my alma mater at the New York Times and said that he doesn't want to do this anymore, but I want to give him a little advice. for the future if he does not want to stimulate the alt-right. First thing, he should never retweet someone with the name White Genocide who lists his address as Jew America. That's what he did in February. He should never ask his supporters again to give the Nazi salute, which he did at a rally in March. That's not a good idea. In July, I think it was a mistake.
Wait, when
to
did he say that?
In March, he asked his supporters to raise and pledge their support to his candidacy and promise to vote for him.
Okay.
There's plenty of video of that. Find that. And then, of course, in July, he retweeted an image of his opponent with the six-pointed Jewish star on it. I thought that was a mistake. But we have bigger problems here. Also in July, you know, he selected as his vice president the most homophobic man in American public life, a person who believes that gay people actually do not have the right to exist. And then, you know, if you don't want to support the alt-right, don't choose as a White House counselor a man who uses the word nigger, whose wife says that he did not want his daughters to go to a school with too many Jews. And don't choose as an attorney general a man who calls the NAACP an un-American organization, and who we learned in The Guardian today went so far as to prosecute
Charles,
two of the
just
people.
Hang on a second. I appreciate you going through all of this, but please don't use the N-word on my show.
I'm sorry. Well, I never use the N-word except when I'm quoting someone who's been appointed by the president to serve in the Oval Office, since this is such a disgusting moment in our history.
Which is kind of a conversation that we have around here, Angry. It's, you know, if you go on and, Tracy and I had this conversation last night about that word. And I am forever uncomfortable with that word, and I'm supposed to be uncomfortable with that word. But if racist Bannon, for instance, comes out and uses that word, and it's a quotable word, then I think it is a journalistic disservice to, pun fully intended, whitewash it by putting an N and some asterisks and an R in print, or going beep over top of it. God damn, let these people speak in their own voices. Don't clean it up for them. Don't pretty it up for them. The American people are grown-ups, aren't they? Don't the American people deserve to hear a racist being a racist? Would you beep it out of George Wallace?
Well, he wouldn't have had to. I mean, George Wallace would have said it if it got him elected. I mean, that was the whole thing with him.
I will never be out again. And I just, you know, violated my own rule because I find the goddamn word so filthy and odious. And
okay, but
I mean,
what's really happening here? There's context.
Right, right. But right, and the thing is, he was quoting a guy.
What are they doing?
And Brooke and poor little Brookie has to dab her little for-profit media eyes because she heard a word that did, I don't think my newscast is a safe space.
And what does that do? What does that do?
Well, there's that word again. It normalizes the usage of the word in hateful context. Does it not?
No. You're missing what really happened with that, and why, you know, I feel there's so much goddamn bullshit, because I already...
Well, I mean, it is bullshit, but if I've missed something, tell me.
Well, look, you know, if the word, you know, I mean, the man, the writer, I've never heard of him before. You know, it's the first time I've seen him. He pointed out and tried to ask, because he's not a brother, but the black man, the house Negro, because that is what he is, who's sitting here backing up Trump and excusing and diffusing and confusing the goddamn conversation by feigning that he's offended, quoting Stephen Bannon. When you can go to Stephen Bannon's goddamn website and see anti-African, anti-immigrant, anti-fucking Latino, anti-native, anti-women crap, anti-Jewish crap all fucking day long. Now, for her on Fox to catch indignancy and to get emotional because he quoted Stephen Bannon using nigga is bullshit.
Well, to be fair, and I guess it's just
maybe it's a distinction without a difference, but not Fox, but CNN.
CNN, whoever the fuck it was.
I don't think they would have had the conniption on Fox. Honest to God, I don't.
No, yeah, they would have for the exact same reason. And this is what I'm getting to. Because they had a black Trump supporter up there, right?
Yeah, and that was clever as hell because
a man who just.
Yeah, that was clever as hell because when you just look at the screenshot, you've got black guy, Brooke Baldwin, white guy. Now the natural assumption is that black guy is going to be anti-Trump, white guy is going to be pro-Trump. But the bookers turned it on its head to make it, to make it more ironically telegenic. You know what I mean by that?
Hold on to what you just pointed out. Go ahead.
And so you're sitting there and you go, oh wait, the anti-Trump guy is the white guy. Oh, the anti-Trump guy, the white guy, just used that word. And should you please don't use that ever again on my show? I'm gonna cry.
Yeah, that's it. So now they are assuming the high moral ground. Oh my God, you used that word. Oh my God, but Stephen Bannon is the one that I'm quoting. Oh my God, but you used it. That's why I went into that little fucking tear before you played the audio, because now the fingers are like you used it. You're the one.
Oh, he ain't getting. He's not getting called back.
Lefty white guy.
Yeah, he's not getting called back.
No, he's not. No. He's not going to get called back at all. But that Uncle Tom son of a bitch will be called back because that motherfucker sat there and, again, played indignancy. But like I said on my Twitter post about it, he's being selectively vigilant about the fucking racism that he's calling out because he wants to fucking, say that this guy or put it out that he's pushing racism. As she did. That the left is pushing racism, right? The KKK is a democratic force. Well, that the left is pushing this after they've been spewing this all the time. Let's be fucking honest. Anybody who's ever been to the divorce court has talked about this. Oh, you're this way, you're this way. And then get in front of the goddamn magistrate and you got your lawyer and she or he's got his motherfucking lawyer. But then all of a sudden, I'm the one that's innocent, even though I've been trying to ruin your motherfucking life, right? I mean, let's be goddamn honest. This is the same bait and switch that we've been motherfucking dealing with. The Republicans are doing the racism, but accuse the Democrats of racism. How do they prove this? Well, they really can prove it. So they go back 100 fucking years to talk about the South when it was all Democratic before and after the goddamn Civil War and shit.
They say, and Bob Byrd.
Yeah, doesn't mean any goddamn thing. And then when you say, because I've been doing this for the past several fucking weeks, well, what about the racism that's going on in the Republican Party today? I'm not even going to go back to Reagan. Today, they can't say anything. They're like, well, you want to talk about things that really don't goddamn matter. I don't think that Trump would do that, but he was trying to get votes. So that's the game. So, and two of them who are libertarians, who live right here in goddamn Portland, both of them business owners, blah, 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 right? One of them actually works for the fucking local Republican Party. We know each other. And that motherfucker told me flat out, yeah, well, he needed the votes. And if that was a way for him to get elected, then he did what he needed to do. That's politics. And you shouldn't be angry because that's politics. So it's not that anybody is really confused about what happened other than the people who voted for Trump. Because I've told you about this, about the people, a lot of black folks who voted for Obama. They thought they were going to get a check.
So that blows my mind a little bit. I mean, it really does. That blows my mind a little bit. I mean, I support the idea of people getting a check.
The whole thing is, even if we are lefties, let's look at the real fucking socialist programs. To each according to their need, and from each according to their ability. You got a lot of people out here who believe in the American way. I shouldn't have to really work for any goddamn thing. I should be in a position where other people are making me money. That's why I like Trump. You've had a bunch of motherfucking house Negroes, rappers. That goddamn Ice Cube, he sings about selling dope and gangsters and blah, 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 and he'll do Boys in the Hood, and then talk about, well, look at Trump, man. Trump is the American dream. He's the American dream. So how political is somebody like motherfucking Ice Cube? And then you got Ice-T, who went from the cop killer motherfucking cut to playing cops on TV and in fucking movies and shit, right? You got Snoop Dogg. He's a pal of Trump's. Azalea Banks voted for Trump. Mike Tyson, if he knows
what he's doing. Hold up. I thought Snoop came out against Trump.
When? Snoop also fucking doesn't know what's going on half the goddamn time because he doesn't care. He's making fucking money. He might have, but there's a bunch of photographs you can find with him, you know, fist bumping goddamn Trump. And yeah, that might have been the fucking past. But if you're going to sing the shit that you were singing on the goddamn whatever the fuck that album, because I'm not into rap, that breakout goddamn The Chronic, and then you're going to fucking be pals with somebody like Trump, what the fuck? Don't tell me about street realism if you don't understand the goddamn politics of what the fucking why the street is the way it is. That's the same as saying, well, hey, blacks are killing black. The street's the street. Can't do anything about it. Can't stop the prostitution. People are going to get high. Can't do nothing about it. So might as well make money from it. Fuck. Yeah, he can be cool and go out here with Martha Stewart and do a goddamn TV show and all that shit. You know, that's all they're doing is making him motherfucking money. Hipster whites will watch that and talk about Snoop Dogg all day long. Ask them about racism. They got nothing to fucking say. You know, I had a former fucking girlfriend years ago. She was in the Nina Simone, white woman, in the Nina Simone. And I'm like, how can you be in the Nina Simone? But every time you and I talk about racism, you know, accuse me of hating white people. These are contradictions, man. They need to be fucking discussed. These are contradictions. And like I said, when you look at a lot of these black folks that are saying the shit that they're saying is positive about Trump, it's because they're trying to outrun the motherfucking lynch mobs. You know, lynch the angry Indian. Don't lynch me. He's the one out here talking shit to y'all, not me. You know, see, they run past me, and then I stupidly say something, and then they turn around and come after my ass. Because that's been my motherfucking experience. You know, white folks see me and say, okay, here's an ally until I say something. Then they're like, oh, well, then fuck him. You know, and then, you know, the type of black folks and shit who don't want to deal with me because I'm such a white boy will then deal with that racist white motherfucker and then tell me in the locker room, well, I get along with the man. You don't. I don't have to worry about him hating me, but he don't like you, so I can sleep at night. That's the world in which I live in.
Yeah.
You know, because they're out here talking shit, but don't do nothing. You know, and then somebody like me, who gets shit from black folks, gets shit from Indians, gets shit from Jews, whatever, not enough for anybody. You know, Filipinos, you know, this is probably the only group that's really fucking kind of accepted me and shit. You know, it's just like, you know, what the fuck? And really, if you want to have a real discussion, talk to the Asian women who have, and black women, because one of them was on YouTube here, that found out how their fucking white boyfriends and husbands really felt about them after the election.
Oh no, I played that clip of the one woman getting screamed at by her white boyfriend in Rhode Island. I mean, I think we talked that night.
Yeah, we might have. And then she broke up with that motherfucker and then ended up with another white dude. Okay, fine. But see, my point is, you were with a white guy. You're going to tell me that you were with this motherfucker for years that she claims and you didn't know that he felt like that? That's bullshit. See, that's the Tom kind of shit that I goddamn did. And I'm being straight up, you know, to deal with white women who I knew really were bigoted, but accepted me, made, you know, provisions for me, but really motherfucking didn't like black people, didn't like natives. Were totally fucking hateful, but made exceptions for me.
Well,
you know, and it's like, no, that's,
there's,
I mean, there were two relationships, I did that for a while, and then I was like, fuck that, man.
Well, there's, and that's a thing that happens. It's one thing to talk about a group, it's another thing to have an individual relationship. And it's a level of compartmentalization. And you know what, it happens, Angry, on the, I mean, it's happening to me right now. And I've talked about it. And it's a problem. Now this isn't from the aspect of race. This is from the aspect of all the white folks I live around.
okay? And you look at him and go, are you one of those Trump people? Because there's so many things that they had to swallow or look past or look around or ignore or stick their fingers in their ears and shut their eyes and go, la, 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 so that they could go in and mark that little oval and make America great again. And it's painful. Because some of these are people that you know and you like. Some of these are people that have been that have treated your own family with kindness and decency. But I mean, and I got no answers. Do you? I mean, I think we can talk about the. I think
let's
we can
all be straight up. What the fuck is going on?
I mean, we can
be straight up. What the fuck is going on? Thanksgiving's coming, right?
Yeah.
People are going home. You know, so go home and tell your uncle how the fuck you really feel and tell him you're a bigoted son of a bitch. And if you don't talk to me after that, well, then fuck it. You know, because why should I have to cotton to your bullshit? You know, because, you know, let's look at it this way. Look what I just told you. Went through those two stupid ass goddamn relationships because I thought I was supposed to. Right. You know, fucking put up with racism at work because I thought I was supposed to. Put up with fucking bullshit in school from students, from teachers, from administrators, because I thought I was supposed to, that this was the price of the ticket to make it in America. You got to kiss white ass. I got to a point in my mid motherfucking 20s that I said, that's it. Because no matter how much ass I kissed, I didn't get any goddamn where. I got no motherfucking respect. And then I'm watching other black people being fucking hurt. And I'm saying, wait a minute, you know, the only reason why this motherfucker didn't come down on me is because he thinks I'm an ally of his. And then to watch, as soon as I say something, my motherfucking whole life change. I've paid a serious motherfucking price for being open about the bullshit. So what I'm saying is, if you really wanted to fucking stop, talk about what the fuck is really goddamn happening. Be honest. You know, be motherfucking honest. You know, when white folks start being honest with themselves, a lot of shit will motherfucking stop. How did the country get founded? What had to happen? Who had to get hurt? Who had to be removed? How was that done? You know, how do we excuse how that was done? There's no discussion about that. How do I know there's no discussion about that? Because people are having non-Thanksgiving parties.
Well, dig it. And I mean, here's one of the realities, since we're talking about Thanksgiving. We're running out of time, but I think this might actually be helpful, or at least a reflection of reality. There's a whole bunch of progressive people, liberal people, whatever we want to call ourselves, who will go into Thanksgiving Day, and they know that they've got relatives who voted for Trump. And so they'll go to Thanksgiving, they'll sit down at Thanksgiving dinner, which, as you've noted, is freighted with all kinds of problems anyway. And they will kind of, and philosophically speaking or emotionally speaking, they'll keep their heads down. You know, maybe they'll pray at the table, and the prayer of the progressives at the table will be, Jesus Christ, please don't let him start talking about Trump. Jesus Christ, please don't let him start talking about Trump. I can't take this, Jesus, please. But the problem arises, angry, in the privileged assumptions that and I guess I'm mostly talking about white families here, but not entirely. The problem arises out of the presumption of the Trump voters that everybody is with you, with them. You know, here I am, pasty-faced, doughy, white, and mid-50s, so people just come up to me and say, by God, we're going to make America great again, ain't we? And then they get this funny-ass look on their face when I look at them and say, wow, you voted for that son of a bitch. Good for you. Because I've done that. And it's really interesting to watch them. It's like shit just falls apart all around. They're totally lost. And these are perfect strangers. Okay? When family does it, it feels more like abuse. Because families know what the dynamics are inside families. And so old Uncle Billy Bob Joe Frank
starts talking about, yeah, by God, pass me some turkey. I tell you what, that's great turkey. That's great turkey, like America's going to be great again.
You know, those are just shots fired across the bow. Because they're trying to start something. Yep. So maybe, yeah. You know, yeah. maybe the single best piece of advice, and God knows I'm not the advice guy on the radio, and I mean, I don't think you try to play that either. But don't take the bait. Don't take the bait. Not in that circumstance. I mean, in a way, it's kind of about being the bigger person, isn't it, Angry?
Well, no, because the whole idea about being a bigger person is that you sit there and take tons of abuse and allow them to, you know, when they finally get tired of spewing, you know, nonsense and vile, then they come to the realization, oh, my God, all these years you were right. Now, that's a whole lot of bullshit to me because the damage has already fucking been done, you know, because I've said this to people, you know, I don't like your fucking grandfather. Oh, but he's 87. I'm like, I don't give a fuck, you know, because it's like he's had 87 years to fuck other people's lives up with his fucking opinions and things that he's done. Why should I respect him? He doesn't like me. I don't have anything to say to him. You know, and folks like, oh, you can't be like that. You should be the bigger person. No, fuck that. Fuck that. That's why I told people.
No, if you're gonna
that a fucking bigot has an opinion.
If you're gonna do something, make sure it's surgical. 20 million people, we just found out, are going to lose their overtime. And, you know, people count their overtime in their budgets, their family budgets. Well, you know, you're going to lose your uncle. You're going to lose your overtime there, Uncle Jimmy Bob Joe Frank. How's that going to suit you for the next year or so? You going to feel greater? And then shut up. Let them chew on it. I mean, it's like the story of Clay County, Kentucky. 60% of the people there now have health care. And they voted overwhelmingly. It's a tiny little county. It's not like there's thousands. But they voted overwhelmingly for Trump. And now they run a very real risk.
They weren't worried about healthcare.
Of losing the healthcare that they had for the first time in their lives. Life-saving healthcare. Healthcare that changed lives. And on the one hand, you know, there's a tremendous opportunity for Schadenfreude. Tremendous opportunity to say, well, you know, Bubba. But goddamn, who are we that we would revel in human suffering? Because we aren't those people. And, you know, it's more like a plea than an accusation. God damn, please won't you learn.
But, yeah, but in a way, you can break that down to economics. Because here you have the same folks who voted for Trump, the same libertarian, Republican, neo-fascist fucks, you know, who will talk all this, you know, pull yourself up by your own bootstraps, who complaining about the Obama administration saving the auto industry. And when you ask them, well, what was your fucking alternative after the banks and shit started crashing over what happened in the previous administration? Oh, well, every man should just take care of himself. Oh, you mean like in Chicago or New York City or in larger metropolitan places where there is no agriculture or anything like that? Well, they were stupid to move to the cities. These people are not thinking. They're just thinking about what's good for them. If the weather's good where the fuck they are, what's wrong with the rest of the country? They're just mad.
That's perfect. Okay. Ain't no climate change. Yeah, because Gerald just chimed in and said, I'm in the same boat you are, Bob. I can damn sure guarantee you that any argument I have with my family over politics will not change their minds or make them have any sort of epiphany.
No, not until something happens to them. You know, it has to be that they're passing out on the street and some gay man who does happen to be with his transgendered friend decides when everybody else is walking past this fat slob that they stop and give this person mouth to mouth and fucking, you know, revive him and wait there holding his fucking hand. And
Or something much more simple and much more prevalent. For the fucking, you know, when a white family gets its first mixed race grandbaby.
No, well, I'm going to tell you what happens with that because I've seen that bullshit.
So have I.
it either goes one of two ways. It's either they fucking fully accept that kid and hate the fucking non-white parent, but they accept the kid. Or they reject the child and whoever the fuck the both parents. Just reject them all together. It's either one or the other. But it's never like, okay, yeah, we just, you know, open arms. No. No. Not even today. There's a whole lot of talk. And then when Thanksgiving comes up and the sherry has been flowing, and all of a sudden it's like, well, you know, people do smell Chinese.
Oh, please. And, we're out of time. You cannot open that door. Jesus Christ. No. We'll save that for another day, Angry. We got to get out of here, brother, but I enjoyed the conversation.
Reach into your pockets and pull some coins and support the show if you can. Peace.
Thank you, Angry. And he's not kidding. We are $165 in the hole. Thank you, Chris, for making the challenge, and thanks to everybody who helped meet that challenge. But we got $165 to go to get out of the hole, and Jesus Christ, there are bills to pay. And I'm not even talking about buying the damn turkey or anything else. There are bills to pay. And I'm out of here. I got to be. I'm already over time. Gina, it's always, it's all for you. Good night, y'all. Back tomorrow, prayer meeting Wednesday.